2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
NBA Daily Dispatch brought to you by DFSArmy.com. Use the promo code PODCAST to get 10% off each month of your daily subscription. With that, you get access to the Domination Station where you can build up to 150 lineups in one click. Yet VIP articles as well that you can customize your lineups with. And, of course, the Slack chat channel, which is always bumping and booming 24/7. Once again, DFSArmy.com. Use the promo code PODCAST to get 10% off each month of your subscription. I am your host, Al Walsh. Find me on Twitter at 14a.walsh. Find Keith Hall at Boomer's DFS Daddy. Keith, another banner weekend for the group.
Oh, my God, dude. Like, it's starting to get ridiculous.
It is.
And, of course, see, here's the thing, okay? Of course, everybody was like, oh, this place isn't as good as, you know, the DS isn't as good, DS is blah, 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 blah. And then I'm just like, you know, let's go back to the history of this season so far, okay?
Okay.
Every single time that we've had multiple days, like, I'm talking like consistently multiple days of under, and I'm just talking like straight optimal head-to-head of under like, you know, 80%. We come out and we absolutely blow it up. Okay? Like, the last stretch that we saw, like, last week was November 13th through was the week before Thanksgiving, basically.
Okay.
Where we went 93% in head-to-heads on November 13th. But then we went out and we went 53%, 5%, 75%. It finished the month going 100, 100, 90, 100, 96, 46.
Oh, my.
You know, last week, we go out and we go on the 12th, which was Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So on the 11th, we go 10%. That was the Draymond Green, Dante Cunningham game.
Ah!
Okay. So we won 3 out of 30. Then we go 96% on the 12th. Then we finish out the week and we go 64, 70, 40. Then we come back on Saturday and sweep. Of course, me, I don't play a lot on Saturdays.
Right.
I didn't do anything but get into some head-to-heads and some Santa Slam qualifiers, so I didn't get to capitalize on crap.
But at least you got some free entries in the Santa Slam. Santa
yeah.
was looking out for you this year.
Yeah, you know, and it's fine. Like, I love the fact that our members are, you know, having success and our staff members are having success. And
yes, indeed.
You know, it's awesome. But you know, it's time. Let's get this, okay? If you ever, I'm just gonna lay it out there. If you ever want to question the DS again, just wait a couple days. It's like the weather in Oklahoma and Colorado. If you don't like the weather, just wait. It'll change. You know? So, anyways, that's kind of the thing. Like, the DS doesn't stay down for long, guys. It honestly doesn't. It doesn't stay down for long. It's one of those things like, you know, let's figure out what we're doing here in order or before we start complaining. So
I wanted to talk about some of these stories from the weekend. Some of these had some really funny pieces to them. So for me, I actually had a very nice day on Sunday. Ended up putting in only $19. Why only $19? Well, because I was dead tired and I just felt like, you know what, like I'm just going to take some really big chances tonight. I'm not doing head-to-heads. I'm not doing any multipliers. I'm not doing anything. So all I did was finish, I forget which one was which, but I finished fourth and second in the $5 single entry and the $10 single entry. And then I also placed pretty high up there in the clutch shot. So I think on $19, I walked away with $1,150. So hell of an ROI there for me. But if you thought that was something nice, we got two more stories that we need to get to. So Zach Adelstein, who one of our cooler members out there, especially to me and you, since he won, on Saturday, he definitely wants to hook us up. Something that we'll never turn down, folks. But again, just such a cool guy to do what he's going to do. But his thing on Saturday was awesome because this is good old karma coming back around to the good folks there. So, Zach, he worked. Now, again, I don't think that these are personal stories or anything. If I tell anything that you didn't want me to tell, my bad. But guess what? You're $50,000 richer. So he ends up, he's at the, he's volunteering for the Big Brothers of America company out there. And they, I guess they were at like a minor league hockey game on Saturday night. So Zach, he told me like he had terrible reception like in the seat that he was sitting in. So in order to go check his lineup each time, he had to go to the bathroom. And just imagine being in a sweat like that where you really can't watch anything. You really have no idea what's going on. But again, just, volunteering your time, right? You probably didn't think, you know, he was going to make any money. And guess what? He walks out of there on Saturday night with $50,000. So a huge congrats to him. He actually he came in first in the clutch shot. We also had another one of our guys. What do you remember the guy that was in second? Damn it. This is going to – he had a great night too.
No, because I didn't – honestly, I didn't I wasn't paying attention. Like Saturday was really kind of weird for us. It was one of those things like, you know, I don't pay attention a lot on Saturdays, so I didn't even know that.
I'm sorry, hold on, here it is, Major Nelson. I was thinking, I'm like Bishop Gorman, something like that. No, it was Major Nelson. So yeah, he was second in the clutch shot for a while. Didn't end up finishing second, but nice night to cash as well for him.
Yeah, it's I didn't pay attention. You know, I saw that. We had a good night and everything, and he messaged me I think yesterday or late Saturday night, and he said that, hey, you know, I'd said that if I ever won big that, you know, I would, you know, take care of the people that feed me. And I was like, dude, you won big. I didn't even know. Like I seriously, honestly did not even know. And
well, that's how the night before somebody won really big and everybody was sweating and I had no idea until the next day. So
yeah, it was just kind of one of those things. But you know, it's,
oh, we got more stories to get to.
I mean, we could sit here for 2 hours and tell the stories of every single member
There are two in particular that I wanted. I'm sorry. It sounded like you were about to like send it off with a nice like closing touch. And I'm like, whoa. We got two more that we got to get to. They're big ones. So of course, Kevin, the leader of the DFS Army, he cashes in for about what, $64,000 last or on Saturday.
Oh, that pissed me off so much.
He took down the big tournament on DraftKings over there. So we had one Army guy do it on FanDuel. We had another guy do it on DraftKings. And what's funny about Kevin is that he really, like, he doesn't watch basketball or anything. Like, we all know him as the fantasy football geek. That's his thing. You know, this whole blog started because, not the whole blog, but the whole site started, when he was doing this as a blog and just, he's been an amazing football guy for years now. So for him to do this in NBA, which I believe was a career high winning night for him, that was just absolutely spectacular to see that happen. And then to close it off, I don't have the guy's last name, the guy named David, maybe it's Wilson, but, he's got the screen name Wilson Haunts You on our DFS Slack chat channel. And, he's going to the Super Bowl, damn it. He's going to the Super Bowl. Oh, so
what?
Yeah. He won a Super Bowl trip yesterday off NFL.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. That was on FanDuel.
Oh my gosh. That's I mean, that's amazing. Congrats.
Stellar lineup, by the way. Looking at it right now, you had Cam Newton, Todd Gurley, LeSean McCoy, Sterling Shepard, Marquise Goodwin, Brandon Cooks, Greg Olsen, Robbie Gould, and I don't know who the defense is, but
sounds like my wife's fantasy, season-long fantasy football team.
Woo! Oh, by the way, going to I got two title matches next week. So
does my wife.
I am running into a buzzsaw in both leagues. Both teams, I'm facing the dream team times two. So wish me luck, everyone.
There you go.
All right. So now, did you want to say that classy thing that you were going to cap it all off with now, or?
Sure, let's go. just so everybody knows, today we are not going to be answering questions regarding tonight's slate. We do this from time to time, about one or two times a year, when it comes into fruition, and we've had – holy crap. Well, we've had an influx of about 15 members since 8 a.m. this morning. So we are going to be answering game theory type questions and roster construction and stuff, not anything specific to tonight's slate. So this podcast can be actually referred to multiple times throughout the course of the season. And we'll keep pimping it out throughout the rest of the season as well. So there's going to be a couple questions that are specific to the DS. So if you don't have a DFS Army membership, they probably won't apply to you. But if you don't have a DFS Army membership, you should probably get in, because we are taking the NBA community by storm. It's actually kind of funny. I am not... We are not a very liked. We've had multiple people come into Slack and say, "Yeah, I've had really good success in the NBA," and then all of a sudden, like, I kept seeing you guys absolutely just smash me. So I had to join just to see what all the fuss was about. You know, so it's becoming to that point where. they're gonna have to start making bigger tournaments. And more tournaments, so we can get all of our members into different ones.
Those are direct quotes, by the way, folks.
Yeah, those are direct quotes. I saw that about five different times this past weekend. So it's kind of funny.
Nice. All right. So for today, everybody put their questions in Keith's GPP discussion channel on the Slack chat there. So I'm just gonna go. Run through them by chronological order. So we'll start from there. Now we had the first question about Trey Lyles there. Declined. He said he will not be answering about questions about today's slate. Declined. So we start with Max, who got it in at 11:59 a.m. Eastern time. Actually, the guy's name is Mike D, so this is interesting. Regarding the placement of ladder system and cash lineups, is there a specific type of cash lineup we should be looking to enter? What I mean by that is some guy wins with the optimal lineup and some guys don't on the same site. Are there specific contests we should be looking for, i.e. lower man, higher man totals in contests?
I would say that you have to – your sweet spot would be, you know, larger field single entries. The problem is right now that, one of the things that we used to hate about, like, say the $2, let's see here, 50-50, if we go to not the $22.50, the $2, they are 100 man. If we go to like the double ups, they are 568 man. Like, a lot of our members enter these. And you're going to see 60-man trains. Well, we used to hate these. If you have the bankroll to do it, start jumping up and buying amounts. There's not a specific contest. The one thing I will say is try to avoid Army members, because on FanDuel, a lot of our guys in cash, and I'm just as guilty of it as anybody. We'll roll out the default optimal. That's what I play in my head-to-heads. That's why I strongly prefer Army members not to grab my head-to-heads, because they already know what lineup I'm putting out there. Now, with that said, if you know, if you want to know what the optimal is, and then you want to see if you can beat it, then fine, just beat it. You know, you don't need to go try to, you know, beat me in a head-to-head. Just, you know, just go see if you can put out a better lineup. But, like, it's just one of those things. I don't... find your sweet spot. That's my big thing. I've had to stop playing 100 bands because a lot of our members play 100 bands, and now what I do is I'll go start sniping. Not sniping, that sounds like a bad term.
Terrible, you're a horrible person.
Yeah, no kidding. I'll go start looking for guys in 3-mans. And if...
The ones that Papa Gates and Chipotle Addict are not in, though.
No, I don't care. I'll go play them.
You want them, okay.
I'll go play them.
Fair enough. Well, I'm saying for a lot of our newer members here, you know, that's typically you'll get two guys gang up on one person in the 3-man. So just be cognizant of that.
Yeah, exactly. So
all right. Now here's another question we hear from Chavanet. Right, I took a little French class. I know that there's a silent T there, possibly, but this one from Vinny Banks. He said how to construct bigger ladders for cash game players. Any thoughts to that?
You can do one of two things. You can either go up to higher buy-ins, or you can,
dude.
You can go up to higher buy-ins, or you can, you know, go to start doing, like, you know, instead of doing just one $5 double up, you can go to, you know, two $5 double ups. You just start stacking the contests. I'm not a big ladder guy. I think that the concept is fantastic. I just don't do it. Right. It's just not something that I've really, really, really kind of done.
Should we refer all ladder questions to the one Chapo Dong?
Probably.
Yes. Okay. Because I, too, am not a ladder guy myself. I'll just stand on a chair. Okay, we've got Signal 4 coming in 12:01 p.m. just after the crack of noon here on the East Coast. He asked the question, how do you decide whether or not to pay up at point guard for a stud? Does it depend on value? Or should you always have at least one stud in your lineup? And then he's got a follow-up question here. We'll throw it in here. Best use of the domination besides the 2020 rule. But let's start with the point guards because I've got some thoughts here.
First thing I want to know is Russell Westbrook on the slate? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's a joke. No, it really does depend on the slate.
I thought you were serious.
I kind of am a little bit. Yeah. It does depend on the slate. It also kind of depends on, at least for tournaments, what the chalk default lineup construction is. If, you know, value is overstated or over exaggerated on that slate from the point guard position, then, you know, as long as there's two feasible guys up at the top, I'll try to pay up for both, get off the default lineup construction that the rest of the industry is on. Mm-hmm. If there is a guy worth paying up for in a good matchup, or that's, I feel like, has the ability to exceed salary-based expectations based on the ownership and the GPP value score, then, yeah, I'll pay up. It's the default lineup construction, if you just go by everything, in my opinion, for point guard, is to pay up for one and pay down for another, or pay mid-range for another. That's, you know, because people are like, oh, okay, well, if I'm going to pay $12,000, I've got to go save some money right now, you know. Mm-hmm. And the default lineup construction for guys building lineups on the sites are, you know, I'm going to plug two point guards in, then go plug two shooting guards in, then go plug two small forwards in, and center's the last spot that they'll do. You know, so that's how people usually do it. I'm not one of those guys. I don't care what position I fill in first. I've got my player pool. I've got guys I want to put in and guys I don't want to put in. There are times where I will play a higher owned point guard who I feel is in a good matchup, because I know that I'm going to go find another low-owned point guard. And I talk a lot about combined ownerships of positions and combined scores of positions. If I'm looking to score, you know, 325 to 350 points, you know, I want a certain, you know, a certain amount of points scored per position and or per slot, and I want a certain amount of points scored per position with a certain amount of ownership. And it just kind of depends, like I said, on the slate, what the, you know, default lineup construction is, the amount of value that's on the slate, you know, where people, where I feel people are going to be trapped into certain aspects of, you know, just, oh my God, this guy's starting and, you know, he's cheap, so I'm going to go get him. You know, well, that's not how I feel like you should be playing. You know, just because a guy is projected to get more minutes in a starting role and he's min priced does not make him a good DFS play, in my opinion.
No, and we've seen a couple instances of that recently where a guy like Mario Hezonja, for instance, who now again not a point guard, just using him as an example, but guys that were thrown into starters roles playing big minutes, that like that that's an outlier, okay? Like, and again, he actually went off yesterday too, but again, this is a guy that we've just always seen just really stink, and you know, now he's finally getting the opportunity, getting those points. That kind of thing has pissed me off, but yeah, sure. I mean, we've had guys like Jonas Jerebko over the weekend, who I even had my winning lineup on Saturday, but again, just because, you know, they're in those positions doesn't mean that they're the best play. I want to talk a little bit about point guards here, because I've been using, and it's not even necessarily paying all the way down, but sometimes I think people forget about those guys in the mid tier, like a Jeff Teague or somebody like that. I mean, if you don't want to pay all the way up, I mean, what I've typically been doing, and, you know, this is kind of the wrong way to, I guess, tell it to the people, but I have, like, whatever slate it is, I have been looking for that value point guard that I can plug in there. Like, I know earlier this week, Frankie Ntilikina had a couple times. A guy like him, sometimes TJ McConnell works out. Sometimes Friday comes around and he only gets 7 fantasy points and your whole night is ruined. But for whatever reason, I've had a lot of success going with these, whether it's a cheap point guard or whether it's a backup point guard. Whatever the case is, I've just been able to find these low-cost point guards that really help out the rest of your lineup. Because you got to think about it, right? Like at the small forward position, if you've got LeBron and Giannis in on the same slate, I mean, these guys have been shoo-ins for, what, like 50, 60 points every game since, you know, whenever the hell. But, again, I just think that point guard position has produced a lot of opportunity for us so far this season. So, doing that, and then again, shooting guards, another position where you can kind of pay down and maybe get a lot more value than you thought you would. But again, don't try to force yourself into it. Make sure the situation is there.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's, you know, there, you should never feel like you have to play somebody. And the difference between, you know, I'm more willing to eat the chalk on a value point guard that I know is going to be handling the ball than I am like a value shooting guard who's just going to pick up minutes. Like Tony Snell can play 35 minutes a game and he's still going to only average like 9 fantasy points.
He is the outlier to my, he'll fall ass backwards into points if he's standing around out there.
So, it's one of those things. So, you know, it's very, very easy to fall into industry-wide traps. So, I don't know.
Okay. Let's get to the next. Well, what about the follow-up question here we've got here, too? Are there any best use of the domination besides the 2020 rule? Anything else that you use to formulate it the way you'd like?
Depending on the slate, I might just do 20 minutes and 15 fantasy points. And usually that's for smaller slates. you know, or I'll go to 25 and 15 on smaller sites where I just want to stack up as many minutes as I possibly can. But, you know, it's the 2020 rule is just basic default. Like, that's just, if you apply that to every slate, then you're going to have success more times than not. That doesn't mean that guys projected under 20 can't be good fantasy options. They can. You know, there have been many times where I haven't agreed with the DS projection because the model has no bias. Like, it has no bias whatsoever. And that's why it's so consistently good. You know, it takes out the name and just goes by the value, the projection, you know, all that good stuff. So it's kind of just one of those things, like, you know, on smaller slates, like yesterday, for example, yesterday would have been a perfect, I wouldn't have cared. I wouldn't have taken out guys under 2020 because then you're left with, like, I did it yesterday, for the DS, for the night slate. I didn't play, but I was talking to some guys in Slack last night and I took out 2020. It would have left you with 15 guys projected over 20 points. You can't build a lineup like that.
Nope.
So, you know, if you're doing like these shorter slates and stuff, you've got to be able to be flexible.
You know who crushed it last night on the slate that helped me out big time? No. Nope. The old Nets combo, Quincy Acey, Tyler Zeller.
Cool.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I didn't know the Nets played yesterday. I had worked, and I still worked yesterday, but I've worked, it seems like, every single day since September.
Oh, yeah.
And I just didn't play. Like, I loaded everything after I got home from church, and I was done. Which was good. It was great.
Yeah.
It was a great day to kind of recharge a little bit, so.
All right, I'm going to take two questions here, and I'm going to combine them into one, okay? So one we got from Schuster Malooster, Derek Blackstone, what's up? And then we've got one here also from TJ Roach, who is named Tim Roach here. So kind of got similar questions here. All right, so Derek says, does late-game news about a player starting that is low-priced usually help win GPPs? And then we've also got one here from TJ, which kind of, you know, comes along into it. And it says, how do you adjust for minutes with late news? If a starter is projected for 28 minutes and the bench guy has 14, what is an easy solution for that? Is it 22 to 25 minutes for each of those guys? Obviously, each situation is different, but more so with the late news, how do I go about that?
As far as the late news and adjusting minutes, pay attention to the DS, because I will adjust that on the back end through the site and usually notify the channels as far as minutes are concerned. Basically what I do is I have a minutes model and I run that minutes model you know, every time that I see that there's something that could affect minutes. And if it's something like, you know, a minute, then I usually don't really worry about it that much. If it's something like, you know, Joel Embiid being out, and now instead of Rashawn Holmes starting, Quincy or not Quincy AC, who's starting tonight?
What game?
For the Sixers,
Amir Johnson.
That's it, Amir Johnson. Then yeah, I'm gonna adjust, because one player just stepping into the starting role isn't just gonna affect those two players. It's gonna affect you know, the surrounding players around them as well. So I'll adjust them. And sometimes the value that you want isn't the guy that it affects directly. It's the secondary affected guys that you want to put in your lineup. So it's not like a blanket, you know, take one guy out, slide him up for the minutes. And, you know, usually when one guy's out, a combination of people are going to pick up those minutes. usually by, 3 to 5 minutes here, 3 to 5 minutes there. There'll be one significant guy, but just because that significant guy gets a bump, contrary to what Kevin says, and he comes in and he loves, he gets overexcited when somebody's out. Like, he's the first person, who does this bump? Who does this bump? Who does this bump? Kevin, let us work. Let us figure it out, and let us make the right decision instead of a fast decision.
I mean, he's got the right idea where we're trying to pounce on, the uptick in minutes or these price for these guys whose price isn't adjusted to them playing so many minutes. I mean, of course he's right on that. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. But again, just got to figure out, make sure who it is, make sure it is the right guy. We're not just saying bing, bow, boop, boop, bing.
Right. So I do adjust those things on the back end. And usually I'll let the channels know, hey, go ahead and refresh. And when I say refresh, I just mean refresh the webpage so the changes take effect. That does not mean clear cache. This does not mean press the reset settings button. It just means refresh the page. Now, the only bad thing about refreshing the page is you lose your likes, your dislikes, your stuff like that.
Great segue to our next question.
Okay.
All right, here we go. So, boy up to no good. What a fella. Daniel Upton is his government name. But he asked the question, what is the best way to approach the domination station with the DK requirement of the like, dislike, lock, etc.? Been struggling since the implementation. Not sure if I should look at the sim model and find the best value plays and quote unquote love them and let the DS do its thing, or should I approach it differently? Thanks in advance. Podcast. That's what the hashtag.
Okay. I like the new implementations.
You're a fan of the buttons, are you?
I'm a fan of the buttons. Now, I think the emoji part of it could probably have been constructed a little bit better, but Kevin's a kid when it comes to his toy, and
for the poo emoji, didn't see it.
As long as the emojis don't make its way into baseball, then I'll be all right.
By the way, speaking of emojis, I got a poop emoji plunger.
Really? I've got an emoji fidget spinner I'm sitting here playing with. So, but it's one of those things. Like, if I really, really, really like somebody, I will go all the way up to a door. If I don't, like Kristaps Porzingis over 9K, he usually finds the poop emoji. Victor Oladipo at 9,300 is better, but he usually is going to find the poop emoji. It's just – or the enrage emoji. I'm sorry. I really wish he would have done the poop emoji. That would have been funnier.
Probably trying to keep it PC for the people.
Oh, I know. It's just kind of one of those things. It takes a little bit of, Kevin's like, I'm going to slap a like here, slap a like there, slap a like here. And it's like, Kevin, you're giving no basis to the reasoning behind you're doing it. You're just kind of like, and guys, I get it. Kevin, he's the boss. He's the boss man. But understand, he goes by the domination station, me, Al, and Donuts. That's how he wins. He just listens. He doesn't
Sounds
know
like a good formula to me.
He doesn't know any better. he literally doesn't know any better. He just he takes all bias out of it whatsoever.
That is true for him right now. Doesn't watch basketball. So he's just able to, that's a great way to put it. There's no bias into it. He goes with it as is. Boy, if we could only be so lucky. Okay. Another question here, which I love. This is always a fun discussion. Probably one of my favorite discussions in all of DFS. But this one comes from our boy, Mr. Majesty. And he asked in here, is it absolutely necessary to have a hammer to win GPPs? Now, the hammer he's referring to, you know, not the male anatomy. He's referring to the late night hammer, having players in the final game of the evening. Because, again, just think about it, all right? If you don't have any players at the end, well, guess what? You're not getting any more points. People that have points in this last game, they can still improve their score. So, is it absolutely necessary to have those late night hammer players to win GPPs?
I would say if it's I would say no, it's not absolutely 100% necessary. But I will say more times than not, you're not going to win if you don't have somebody from the West Coast. If there's a West Coast game in there, if there's a hammer game like Golden State and LA tonight,
hey,
you're not going to – you better have a sizable lead. Like, you better hit the nuts in the early game.
Well,
if you want to hold on to that lead, because if not, you're screwed. It's the same aspect as in baseball. Like, in baseball, you're going to find the hammer games are low owned. Like, just because pitchers parks and everything. Well, the Western Conference, especially the West Coast teams like the Lakers, the Suns,
Warriors,
the Warriors, the Kings before this year, the Clippers, like they always played at a faster, they always play at a faster pace. So there's more possessions, there's more opportunity for fantasy points and everything like that. Like, you don't want to be the guy that fades the Lakers because of a quote unquote blowout, or the Warriors because of a quote unquote blowout, and have Klay Thompson go for 60 because he gets hot in three quarters. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to be the guy that, like, it's just, that's why we don't predict blowouts. And a lot of it has to do with you, and we make sure that you know to pay attention to the hammer games. It's not that you have to have them, but I promise you, if you just try to avoid them and then you get burned three or four times, you're going to make sure that you pay attention to it. And as soon as you get burned three or four times by quote-unquote predicting a blowout, you're going to make sure that you stop. Right. So that's the thing, is a lot of these commandments came about from me and Al sitting down and discussing things over the course of, God, it took us, what, 2 months probably to
about that, yeah.
Come up with them. It's a lot of things that we've experienced that we wish that we would have known. And they're used as teaching purposes. And like, it's one of those things, like, we talk about at times, you can basically make a late West Coast only lineup. And there are times where it's going to outscore everybody's main lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just stacking the West Coast games, because they play at such a fast pace. Like, and that's usually when you've got, like, a Portland game, a Lakers game, and a Golden State game, and a Phoenix game. Like, if those four teams are at home on a late slate or on a main slate, like, I will throw in, I will stack that those four games in every situation in five different ways and throw them all into late or into tournaments in the main slate, because not a lot of people do it.
Nah.
They're so, the fear of missing out on people is so real in DFS. It's not even funny.
Very true. Very true. I mean, hell, there's times where I'll play a guy like an Oladipo or Porzingis. I got to play him to prove to you that my end of the argument was right on the podcast. Obviously, don't recommend doing that for most people, but again, it's funny how it works some days, and others days you're just like, damn it, I was wrong. But yeah, I mean, you know, something else that's interesting that people really don't look at, right? So tonight's a different sort of animal where we've got the 8:30 games and then a big gap, and well, I guess a big gap until someone another game starts, and then you got the 10:30. But like Saturday, for instance, was a good example, because the last game was at 9 o'clock, and then you also had like an 8:30 game. You had an 8 o'clock game in there as well. So just because you don't have any exposure to that 9 o'clock game, it's all good. Like, I still had exposure to that 8 o'clock, to that 8:30. You know, you guys still had scoring points. We almost had some overtime in there, which could have overlapped as that late night hammer. I think the main point is, when you have that one game standalone that starts by itself, or sometimes you have those two games, yeah, you probably want some exposure to those. But
like tonight, with the Lakers, and Warriors,
exactly. But
you don't want to purposely, like, the only reason you're purposely fading that game is to hope that this fantasy production is so evenly spread out that nobody's just going to go bananas.
But and then again, when you got the games with the half hour in between, that's still kind of your late night hammer.
Yeah, like if Portland starts at 9 and the Lakers start at 9:30, in Central Time, you know, Portland is still what I would consider a hammer game. It's still a West Coast game. It's, you know, I don't want to – what I mean by hammer game is I don't want to stack up on East Coast and Central Time games and then just completely forget about Mountain and West, you know, unless I'm using that as kind of like a game theory type thing, you know. And that's only if I'm building, you know, multiple lineups. And then I will have, you know, some East Coast game stacks in there, some West Coast game stacks in there. So, but I'm making sure that I have exposure in my player pool to those guys. Like, it's just not even a question. When I say always make sure you have a late night hammer, that's if you're building multiple lineups. Like, I can build lineups where I stack the, let's see. So tonight I can stack the Miami-Atlanta game, the Philly-Chicago game, I can stack the four East Coast games, and then I can, you know, throw in a little bit of the Houston game or the San Antonio game, and then throw in one guy from the Lakers and Golden State. And then I can, you know, you can do different things to make sure that you have that. But in my player pool, I don't mean it like in every single lineup you have to have a late night hammer. I mean it like, you have to make sure that you pay attention to it. And the easiest way to get a blanket full of 1,600 people to pay attention to it is to make a commandment specifically stating it. Pay attention to it. You don't predict blowouts. Pay attention to pop. And don't forget the late night hammer. And that's the easiest way to do it. Because I can't tell you how many times people have said, oh my God, I built the lineup and I don't have a late night hammer. I hope that everything gets canceled in the West Coast.
Like a mass power grid outage is what people are looking for.
Or water seeping through the court because of the hockey ring underneath the Staples Center tonight.
Yeah, man. 'Tis the season.
So,
all right, let's go to our boy PD Lee 85. Actually, if you want to find his name in the, like, in a phone book, for instance, it would be Pete Thompson. But yeah, sir. What is the best way to attack pick'ems? Spread the players by the times they play, or just roll with the prime players no matter what?
I really honestly wouldn't know. I don't play a ton of pick'em.
Okay.
And when I do, I just basically pick the, like, one of the top two guys out of each tier through our projections. That's all I really do. I know that's not really but I don't have time to really go into pick'ems and really pay attention to it. Like, I'll play it every once in a while, but usually it's usually gotcha. Not anything huge.
All right, let's go to one here from Nav Seal. Guys in Rick Caruso. Now he asks, how does adjusting the unique player number affect the optimizing of the lineups? What number is best for cash lineups? Any difference in using fantasy points versus DFS army points? Now that's on the domination station that he's referring to. Thanks in advance. Only his second week here. thank you for coming in here. And if you really are a Navy SEAL, thank you for your service. Those are some badass mofos right there. Navy SEALs.
No.
We are looking for a little more security on the staff. So, definitely inquire with us after the podcast.
Yeah, no kidding. Basically what the unique player number effects is, say you build the optimal lineup. Okay, and you build, we'll start with the three unique players, okay? And you build five lineups. Each lineup after the first lineup is going to have three different players in there.
So the first lineup would be the optimal.
Lineup would be the optimal. And then the second lineup is going to have three different players. And then the third lineup is going to have three different players from the lineup from the second lineup. So it's not like you're going to have three unique and have the same core in every single lineup from the optimal. Like, it's not going to do that. It's going to build a lineup that's unique. Some lineups end up only being two different from the optimal, or one different from the optimal. You know, depending on how many lineups you build. If you're building a player pool from 150 lineups, then you're going to have some that are only one or two different from the optimal. But it's going to be two different or three different, depending on what you set your uniques at, from the lineup it built before. So.
Yeah, now, actually, I run a theory, the 10-3 theory, I call it. I run 10 lineups with three uniques. But I'm a one lineup kind of guy per slate, but the way that I use it to get a player pool going for myself, right? So, again, if I'm running for 10 lineups with the three uniques, you'll see that little that screen on the left where it shows you all the calculations of how many guys are in how many different lineups. So if I see a guy in there 10 times, I know that he's such a good value that the optimizer wants to put him in all 10 of those lineups. So that's just a little system that I've used over the past. Again, if you see guys in like 7, 8, 9, 10 lineups, again, that just means that's how good of a value the system sees these players as, that they're going to try to fit them into as many lineups as possible. So
yeah,
just another cool backend way to use it.
Yep, exactly.
All right. We kind of talked about it, but if you want to, just re-tag it a little bit. This one coming from E. Jamie C. Jamie Campbell here. So yeah, that's how it is. Is it entirely slate dependent on if you should always pay up or down at a certain position?
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
Gotcha. And then we got one here. See, I like the balls on this guy. His screen name: Going for Eight. Right, so going for the two-pointer after the TD, I dig it. Austin Hodges, he asks, how can you tell when to go stars and scrubs or balanced on your lineup process?
Depending on how much value comes out, that's usually what the industry is going to default as. Depending on the tournament and what I'm trying to accomplish with that lineup, and where I'm putting that lineup would depend on what I want to do. What I mean by that is this, is if the default lineup construction is stars and scrubs and I'm playing in the $4 shot or the, I'm wanting to get off the chalk, I'm going to try to build a fair and balanced lineup as much as I possibly can, because, you know, by me not playing the $3,500 point guard that's going to get 30 minutes, I'm getting off of the same player. I'm getting out of the same player pool as everybody else in that tournament. And I'm going to get a lower combined ownership. Usually it's not one guy with a lower ownership that's going to win you a tournament. It's usually a combination of one or two guys that are going to be at lower ownership that do end up going off. FanDuel's been really good about pricing up guys that are going to see extended run if they can predict it. It's just something they've been really good at this year. And that's allowed us, this is something that DK was really good at last year. And that's allowed us to kind of, that's when the domination station can really, really, really give you an edge over everybody else, is when it's helping you decide exactly who to put in and when to put them in.
Gotcha. All right, let's go to another one here. This one from Flying Spaghetti. He actually had a pretty good night there on Saturday as well. Didn't win 50K or Super Bowl tickets or anything, but Philip DiPatrizio, very good night there on Saturday. He asked a question here. When do you think is the best time to enter 50-50s? Double ups, triple ups, quintuple ups, etc. Do you think fish are more likely to enter 50-50s close to lock? It seems logical to think that DFS players enter early and then start planning. Any thoughts to that? Now, by the way, he mentions fish in there, basically DFS newbies out there.
Yeah, the closer to lock, the better, the less experienced players you have. And what I mean by that is this, is guys like me, I plan starting the night before, what contests I'm going to enter stuff like that. Especially cash games, cash type games, 3-mans, 100-man leagues, head to head, stuff like that. I put out my head to head contest the night before because I want them I want as diverse a player pool as I possibly can get. And I've got all of my badge qualifications, so I'm not going to get picked off by Chipotle Attic for every single head-to-head. But I can, if I post my head-to-heads, or like I posted my head-to-heads last night, and I had almost half of them gone before I went to bed last night.
Oh my.
Like, guys will just go in and just randomly, and a lot of them are by guys that don't have a badge at all. So, like, I'll just randomly go in and look, and they'll be gone. So I would say cash games, your cash lines that you enter lower or closer to lock are probably going to be a little bit lower. But I don't have any research to back that up.
All right.
It just seems like, you know, to me, like, because at 5 o'clock, I'm not worried about I'm hunting for tournament overlay. You know, very, very rarely am I looking for cash game overlay.
All right. Now, this next question here is from a Mets fan, so I don't even feel like I should read it. I should probably just throw it in the trash. But anywho, Robin Bushy.
Mets fans have feelings too.
The hell they do. Robin Bushy asks us, what is the best process for finding and spotting value plays after. Oh, I'm sorry. What is the best process for finding and spotting value plays? After all, just because they start, it does not mean that they'll be playable, right?
Ding, 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 ding.
Now, we touched on this earlier in the podcast today, but again, I think it's important to talk about it again.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, I want guys that are going to take shots and get usage, that are going to be active on the defensive end, that are going to, you know, be handling the ball and initiating the offense. Like, those are the type of guys that I like. I don't like a guy like, you know, a Kyle Korver that's going to get 8 to 9 shots. And if he gets hot, he's going to get more feeds. Those are great tournament guys, like large field tournament guys that you have to, like, I don't consider it a throwing the dart type of player, because a guy like Kyle Korver, if I'm going to max enter, 150 lineups every single day, like, that's the type of play that I want, you know, I'm going to make sure that I have exposure to those type of guys not in every lineup, but in my player pool, they're going to have some exposure, because I know that every single night they have the opportunity to get hot. And then if they get hot, if Kyle Korver comes out and drains his first 4 or 5 threes, LeBron James is going to feed him. Have you ever noticed that? Like with Kevin Love, if he comes out hot, LeBron James he defers. And defaults.
He's a facilitator.
Exactly. It's guys like that that, you know, win you tournaments, but you can't try to pick and choose when you play them, because the odds are you're never going. That's why they go Not that Kevin Love goes low-owned, because he goes off more times than, you know, Kyle Korver. But that's why guys like Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith is another one that can do that. J.J. Redick with the Clippers used to be one of these guys. These guys usually go lower-owned because of, you know, their propensity to be inconsistent more. It's just kind of how they work. So
another easy way, you know, not to sound like a dick about this, but if you do want to find the easiest and quickest route, you just go to the domination station and use the dollar per point tab out there. Again, it's not a direct, you know, basis for this, but it's a good way to get you on track again for people that don't really know basketball that much. But it's a decent way to start. Also, I recommend subscribe. Like, again, I'm not trying to push other companies' products, but again, if you really do want to be good at basketball, I would certainly get the subscription to Basketball Monster, just because everything's in one spot easily for the people there. But again, we use it too. It's a nice site, you know, just for news and all sorts of other things like that. So they kind of outline a lot of these things as well. And also, I have created the new I call it the NBA Hub Chart. I'm definitely looking for a new name for it, because Hub Chart is just about as unsexy as possible. But on there, so basically what I did is I took the ADVP chart that Keith uses and kind of included both, like, you'll see it in the matchup there for the two teams playing that day. But then I have the depth charts there, and it shows which guys are in good spots. But also, too, you know, we've got the injuries on there, so you'll be able to see, all right, like, if this guy's going to be out, maybe this guy from this column are going to be able to chip in for some minutes as well. Again, it's going to be a work in progress all season, but I've gotten a lot of great feedback on it so far from people, so thanks for that. And again, it's all about just making things easier on people, trying to find things in one spot. Again, you know, like we were talking, but you know, hey, Basketball Monster's got all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, we're getting there too. So, you know, we might just be the one-stop shop for everything. But yeah, all those ways are oh, they're good routes to go to.
Yeah, and I like this phrase right now. Like, I've wanted to say this in NBA talk so many times. God gave us one mouth and two ears, or two eyes in this case, for a reason. Guys, like, seriously, the most information and the most work happens the last 2 hours up to lock. Like, there is no – I'm not telling you what to do or what not to do, but – if you want to make sure that you don't miss anything, your Slack should not be open to NBA talk from like 90 minutes into lock. It should be in the NBA notes and news section.
Yes.
Because that is where Al is going to, and Donuts.
And Mitch, yes.
Is going to go through everything. I go dark after my notes. Like, it's just plain and simple. I answer a lot of the questions on the if, ands, or buts scenarios based on what I think in my notes. I cannot keep answering all the questions all the time. It's
a lot of questions.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of members who are willing to learn too. So it's not all bad, but I get what you're saying. I mean, right. Again, too, for me, like, again, answering a lot of these questions, I don't mind doing it. Like, some days I don't mind when I know that my lineup is ready to rock and then I can answer some A or B questions. I have no issue with that whatsoever. But, again, I know, you know, we all do a lot of work here, so.
But what I'm saying is, like, stuff gets buried so quickly in the NBA channel.
Yes,
like,
that is very true.
Like, you could ask me a question, and 3 minutes later, it's gone. Like, oh, yeah. I'm not going to know that you asked me a question other than a little red number tag. And the closer it gets to NBA lock, the more of those tags I get. I'm not going to know. Like, I'm 100% serious. I am not going to know.
Again, it's a victim of the success, though.
Yeah, and it's not that I'm ignoring anybody. It's just I'm ignoring everybody. Like, nice. I don't like, I'm not ignoring anybody specifically. I'm ignoring everybody after that, because my job is to make sure that the Domination Station is uploaded and updated and adjusted to late-breaking news. And I'm going to do that. Like, that is my first priority before my lineups, before answering any questions or anything like that. And then once I do it, I will usually put in that update channel that it's been updated and that you need to refresh to reflect the changes that I've made on the back end. That's usually how it'll work. I won't say go here or go there or anything like that. I will just say new minutes have been adjusted for the Clippers tonight because Austin Rivers has been announced out. Not that he is or anything, but you know, I'm using it as an example. That's how I will do it, and I will let Mitch and Al kind of do the player analysis on there. Not that I'm not capable. It's just I've got too much going on.
Oh, we know you're capable, Keith. We know you're fully capable. All right, now we've got one real question and one faux question, but we'll save the faux question for the end. Late one there from Jimmy, but damn it, now we got two. All right, here's one. This one coming from Larry Barbie. He asked, what is the formula that the pros use to create a winning lineup in any sport? How do you use exposure to help improve your lineup to succeed in any contest?
Really, it's just it's how risky do you want to be? It's kind of a hard way to explain. A lot of it goes slate dependent. It goes on matchups. It goes on salary of the player, default roster construction, stuff like that. It's not a specific hard, fast rule. And a lot of it honestly comes with experience. You know, having, you know, game time, quote unquote, underneath your belt. You know, a rookie's not going to be as good as a guy that's, you know, shouldn't be as good as a guy most of the time 5 years into the NBA. Like, you know, Dennis Smith Jr. is not as good as Russell Westbrook.
He is not, no.
You know, now, could Dennis Smith Jr. eventually be as good, if not better, than Russell Westbrook? Sure, there's a possibility,
I'm sure
I guess.
He prays about it every night.
I'm sure he does. But, like, you're not going to be – if you're 3 months in, you're not going to be as good as, you know, Condia or Sahil Sahud or, you know, some of these guys that have been around the industry for years and years and years. It can you be as good as some of them eventually? Probably. But you're going to have to work at it. Like, it just, it's really hard to sit there and say, okay, this is how they do it. Like, because I promise you, like, the way I attack and approach things is different than the way that Al does, or the way that Kevin does, or the way that Tommy G does, or the way that, you know, CSU
Rat
Ram
Thad.
Dubs, or Rat Dad, or
hey, buddy.
We see you, or, you know, a lot of these other guys. It just, we all have, like, find what works for you. Try to be you. Don't try to be somebody else. I can't be a 100% cash game player. I cannot be a guy that is – I cannot be a hoop 24-10 who is a cash game type mind. You know, I cannot be a Notorious who is a cash game type mind. I cannot be a Big T who is a GPP type mind, because even though we have a lot of the same thoughts – I'm a different type of player than they are. Be you. Find out what works best for you. And the only way that you can do that is by playing and figuring it out. And I'm not talking about, oh my gosh, I played this and it bombed, so I'm not going to do this anymore. You don't know what works for you until you do it for a little bit of time.
Yeah, and a perfect example of that for me, like how I was talking about earlier. For me, what's been working? trying to find that little value point guard, you know, try to find some value at that position. And again, it's just something that I've been working with lately. Again, I've been working with this chart lately that I just released to everybody. That's something that works for me. So now I'm releasing it out there to the public. But again, he's absolutely right. Keith is in saying that, you know, just try to find what works well for you. Mm-hmm. Indeed. All right. There was the faux question. We can get to that because looks like we have another one coming in. But Keith, when you yell at me on the show, is it frustrating? Like frustrated yelling like on I Love Lucy or old couple or old married couple like on The Honeymooners? Jimmy would like to know.
I wouldn't say it's frustrating. Okay. I would say I get frustrated at a lot of things that happen throughout the day. Yeah. And I yell at a lot of things. Usually nobody's able to hear me. It just happens to be that we're recording when I'm yelling at you. And I yell at you like when we disagree, it's not just on the podcast. Like
no.
I'm the same way off the show as I am on the show. Like I don't have any specific, you know,
I drink the way off the show that I do on the show, right?
Yeah, I don't have any specific. I don't act differently. I just don't do it. It's just not who I am. I don't know how to act differently. I'm the same person right now as I am all the time. And that's just kind of how I do things. Now I don't. I usually will type out a lot of things. Boom.
We asked that the question that yeah, just came that in. Just, we answered that one. All right.
I usually type out a lot of things in the NBA channel and then I'll delete them because, you know, not a lot of good will come out of me telling people how dumb they're acting or, you know, to scroll up a lot of times. I got into a habit last week of just saying notes or slap head or, you know, head wall banging or, you know, stuff like that. I got in trouble for that. So, you know, because we have so many new members, they don't understand. So I won't be doing that as much, but I thought it was funny at the time. And that's what it was meant to be. It was meant to be funny. It wasn't meant to, because like we hear the same questions 50 times a day. So when me or you disagree on why Victor Oladipo is unplayable at 9,300 tonight, yep. And it's passion. I wouldn't say it's yelling. I would say it's passion. We're very Ooh. Passionate. Our passion
Good
buckets are full.
NBA passion between two men.
Our
Nothing
passion buckets
wrong.
Are full.
No, you know it's funny for me, like I'm not a big yeller. I think I've yelled like 3 times in my life and they were all while I was playing hockey. And I don't know. It's not that I don't get mad. I get mad plenty. I don't know. I'm just not a yeller. That's how it is. So yeah, it's funny. I think, you know, when we do this, a lot of it's more comical than it is serious. But I think we're both just trying to get our point across there. And, you know, but like we, you know, people follow Keith for what he says. People follow some of the things that I say. It's a good back and forth. That's all it's meant to be. All right. Last question here before we get out of here. This one coming from possibly the best name in the DFS Slack chat group, Naked Wombat. He asks here, how do I identify upside players, potential ownership for GPPs?
Oh, crap.
How do you do that? You did not like that question from the Naked Wombat?
It's not that I don't like it. It's just that I don't know how to answer it because, like, I just know. I just guess. Like, it's how it's – okay, well – I know how the industry reacts based on, you know, who's touting who. I feel like a lot of our guys in the NBA channel don't have the capability of listening to other people talk about good plays and bad plays and all stuff like this without putting that into their own lineup building process. Not saying that there's not good other good people out there, but what I'm saying is like, you can, in the NBA, there is such a thing as information overload.
If
me and Al are touting a guy, and then the you've got five other podcasts out there telling you that this guy's trash, you're more likely to defer to what you hear the most, you know. I've come to the conclusion already that if 15 other people are saying that this guy's trash, then I know that they're going to be low owned. But if everybody's touting a guy, that doesn't just because other places tout a guy, and I listen to a lot of chatter, Twitter, other podcasts, stuff like that, and I just kind of gauge this guy's going to be higher owned, and I'll relay a lot of that in my notes. Look, I feel like this guy's going to be highly owned today. He is a candidate in tournaments to be able to fade because of the ownership, and he has a higher potential to bust. You know, I'll put that in my notes. That doesn't necessarily mean that I think they're a bad play. It just means that in tournaments, I think, and very rarely do things catch me off guard. Like, I think it was JJ Barea last week was chalky, and that caught me off guard because I could never think, and it was on a larger slate. I could never think of JJ Barea as chalk just because I don't think that he's he has good games. I just don't think he's
not a lot of upside for him.
Yeah. You know, there's just certain things that I get surprised about, but it's not often. And it just comes from experience. If a point guard's going to open up and play 35 plus minutes and he's min price, I know he's going to be chalky, you know?
You know, it's funny that you just mentioned that you talk about experience, and this is more or less, I think, trying to get ownerships down pat, right? But, I mean, I don't know. This is my third year covering NBA DFS. It's probably my fifth year seriously playing NBA DFS. But on it, like, what's funny is that you still learn new stuff every day, right? Like, we don't just have all the answers to everything. Like, you're still learning something every day. And I think something that I always love looking at too, which I think helps identify upside players, you know, the opposite end of this thing, is that, you know, using that the adjusted DVP chart. I mean, that thing has been a godsend to me, and it's already calculated into the domination station as well. If you ever looked at it, that's the color, one of the colors on there. But, just the DVP has been really huge. So I think, you know, you certainly want to be looking at that with upside players.
Yeah, and I mean, we've got – honestly, you could go back and you could read the, the Slack chat. The guys that are talked about the most over and over and over and over and over and over and over, they're going to be chalky. The guys that aren't, they aren't going to be. It's just –
Yeah, it's an interesting way, and that's a good point, too, that you mentioned, because, now we have 1,600 members here in the Slack chat channel. You know, not all of them are all Army members. I know a couple other people subscribe to other different sites as well, but you got to think, like, this is kind of like a 1,500 to 1,600, group of control people, right? Because you think about it, I'm sure it's kind of like a survey almost, in a way, where we asked a group of 1,600 people what they thought about tonight's slate of players. This is kind of like a nice little thought. Like, if you see a guy being talked about, odds are 25% of the people out there are thinking about him as well. So it's a unique way that you can use that to what the public thinks too.
You know how I know what kind of – and this is the last little point, and then we'll get out because we're running short on time. But you know how I know, like, how people are going to either criticize or love the DS for the night is when the final DS comes out and people hate the optimal on FanDuel.
Yeah.
Like, if people hate the optimal on FanDuel, I know it's going to be a good night. Because, like, people don't – like, guys, there are so many times we've talked about cognitive biases in DFS, and it applies more so to NBA than I think any other sport. Because it's been drilled into your head that NBA is the most predictable and it's, you know, all this other stuff. And yeah, to a point it's true, but it's still unpredictable certain nights because it also depends on things that, you know, our rotations and fouls and, you know, a bunch of other stuff. But like, if, who was it the other night that showed up in the optimal, that people just absolutely hated?
Timothy Luwu Cabarabo.
Yeah. Like, okay. Like, if he's slated to get. Oh, no. It was Michael Beasley on one of those nights. Or not Michael Beasley. Mario Chalmers.
Yes.
You know, the night that. And
that Harrison went bananas. That
Andrew Harrison went bananas. And I'm like, guys, look, he shot 70% from the field. He had multiple assists and rebounds. And, like, Andrew Harrison got hot and it cut into Mario Chalmers. And I said the next time that the freaking Memphis Grizzlies played that Mario's Chalmers was going to be absolutely 100% perfect play going up against the Wizards because of the fact that nobody was going to play him because he was – I was like, he also got 9 less minutes than what we had projected that night. The next night that Memphis played, Mario Chalmers showed up in the optimal. What'd he do? He put up 31 fantasy points and had the game that we thought he was going to have the night before or the time before.
Which is hysterical because I forgot.
And he did it at 3% owned.
Nice.
So, guys, you got to – it's like if you don't like the lineup, play it. Like I promise you if – this is why the DFS FanDuel Optimal has such a high success rate in head-to-heads. Is it can make better decisions over the course of a season, over a month, than we can. You might beat it one night, but you're not going to beat it consistently. And as we heard a lot of times this weekend, if you can't beat them, join them. And that's what a lot of people have decided to do.
Indeed. Well, that does it for today's pod. And if you would like to join us, you could do so. DFSArmy.com.
Almost made the whole podcast without
that. I know. Use the promo code podcast to get yourself 10% off each month of your subscription. A lot of things that we talked about today, you get on a daily basis. It's just an awesome group of you know, guys talking hoops and football and whatnot. It's truly is amazing what it's become. And, you know, even the fact that we've grown so fast in membership here over the last couple months, you know, we've really been able to weed out a lot of trolls, a lot of haters and things like that. So it's just, again, it's just a good, you know, community, common-minded folks like yourself out there. So we're having a lot of fun doing it. And, hey, when you can make money and have a lot of fun doing it, there's really no better thing going on in the world, in my opinion. All right, for me, Keith, rest of the DFS Army, we gone until Wednesday. Only 3 games tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Peace out.